EF United, a premier Cold Fusion conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
We're going to talk about basics of databases, basics of Cold Fusion talking to databases, data source names. Basics, though. The key word here is basics. If after 10, 15 minutes you realize that you know all this stuff and I am just sort of, well, feel free to walk out. I won't be offended. Providing you fill out your surveys, you know, and you circle fives, and if you want to put down best damn speaker, period, that would be cool, too. Okay, something about me so you know who I am. I own ComputerMan.com. I am the single largest single employee vendor for the state of Idaho. I basically write the state of Idaho many different applications. It's all wrote in CF. Unfortunately, state of Idaho being what they are very slow to adapt to new technology, so I am stuck in CF5, which is a drag. The last thing here, you know, my wife made me put in this thing that says, I like to talk. I'm a big believer of it takes one to know one. I told her that, and oh man, did it get noisy at my house. So don't want to do that. Okay, the nice thing about Cold Fusion is it makes database access exceedingly easy, almost too easy. And that to me is the one thing I like most about CF is I can talk to a database without any issues at all, really. I'm assuming you have some experience with Cold Fusion. In other words, you know what Cold Fusion is. You might know what CF output is, things like that. If you don't know anything about Cold Fusion, that's okay because there is nothing really so high level here that you can't grasp. Many of these topics are not specific to Cold Fusion. Some of them are just specific to databases in general, to SQL, structured query language in general. And I have a little application that we'll be running as this progresses, and you can download all this stuff later on too. Okay, so the agenda today, talk about databases, SQL statements, Cold Fusion, how do you work with them, how do I get data into my database, how do I get database or data out of my database, creating queries, creating forms, all those neat things is what we will talk about today. If you have questions, there aren't so many people here that we can't stop and answer a few of those. So if you have a question, just stop me and ask me. And you know, I noticed this guy in the back, he's videotaping me, and I'm sorry, but I just gotta do this. You know, I've never been videotaped at a presentation before, so I just gotta go, hi mom. if you feel obligated to say hi to your mom or dad, you know, there's a camera, just stand up and wave. you just gotta do it every now and then. Okay, so a database management system is just a piece of software that collects, stores, and organizes data for you. You got SQL Server, you got Oracle, you got MySQL, you got Progress, you got Informix, you got DB2. You got things like Microsoft Access. Don't forget the survey. Oh, dang. Microsoft Access, by the way, is an application that is both a database server and a database. It kind of combines them both into one. The nice thing about your database server, though, is it does not have to run on the same machine that your Cold Fusion server runs on. Cold Fusion has to be able to talk to it, but they can be on separate machines. Databases, by the way, are the heart of business applications. This is one of my soapbox items. You know? Databases are critical for your applications. You know? If you don't have a database yet, you will have one at some point in time if you're writing an application. And if your application doesn't work, I would look at your database first, because usually 99 times out of 100, an application will fail because of poor database design. That's, like I said, a soapbox item of mine. Okay, so how does Cold Fusion talk to a database? Well, we have our Cold Fusion server here on, I guess that would be your left, and it will send out a SQL call to a database server on the right-hand side. It sends out the SQL request. The database server goes, oh, I know what you're talking about. Here's your data. The SQL server passes the data back to Cold Fusion. Cold Fusion will format that data and send it back to the browser in whatever format you want. Cold Fusion uses this thing called data sources. You set these up, and it refers to the ODBC driver or the JDBC. Open Database Connectivity is what ODBC stands for. And it's just a method that actually all applications use to talk to databases. It's a very standardized thing. I told you it was very basic. Very basic. It's just a standardized thing that is used to communicate with databases. We'll talk about how to set one up here very, very soon. Data source, in the data source, when you create it in ColdFusion Server, you store things like where is the database at. In this case, we're going to be storing or talking to a Microsoft Access database, so we have to tell it where the file is physically located. You have to give your database or your data source name something unique on the server. In this case, we're going to call ours pets, I believe it is, although I think I have a mistype here on curdy1_pets. It's just pets_db. You may be able to use the ColdFusion drivers, the native drivers. You may have to get your own ODBC drivers. It just depends on what you're doing. Progress, you know, I don't know how well it's going to work. I've been working with FoxPro for a while, and I've had to download my own drivers for that or from Microsoft, and FoxPro is a little more difficult. You can set some parameters when you create your data source, and we will go through CFAdmin to create a data source here in just a second. But you can set various parameters in there. You can restrict access to read only. You can store your username and password, so you set it once and you forget about it, and the rest of the time you're working with that data source, you don't care about the username and password. And you can set your data source to work with blobs. I love blobs. You can store pictures in databases. This is a cool feature in my opinion. But you have to set that up in your data source. You can see the CFAdmin manual for all of those nitty-gritty details. In this case, we're just going to create a quick, actually there's already one created, but we're going to create a quick data source using CFAdministrator. So I'm going to come over here to my admin screen. I've already logged into CFAdmin. If you've used ColdFusion Administrator before, this screen is very familiar. If not, all you have to do is come to the left-hand side, scroll down to Data Sources, click on Data Sources, and this screen here will appear. So I'm just going to add a real quick database or a data source for a Microsoft Access database. I'm going to just call it a data source. It is going to be a Microsoft Access database driver. And these are all the database drivers that are native to ColdFusion. If your particular database brand does not show up in this list, you can create an ODBC driver on your server, and you can connect to your database with that. I'm not going to talk about how to create an ODBC driver here. It's really not that difficult of a process, but it works very well. If you did create your own ODBC driver, then you would have to use this ODB socket. In our case, we have a Microsoft Access database. I'm going to select that, and I'm going to add my driver. As soon as I get the next screen, I have to come and find my Access database, so I'm going to click on my Browse Server button. I'm going to click on where I know it's located. In this case, it happens to be on the C drive. It's under C:data, because I don't like Microsoft's naming convention. I don't like program files. I put it in www root, and where did it go? CFUG, ColdFusion United Group, or Users Group, pets.mdb, that is my actual Access file. I hit apply, and you know when you're creating your data source, you should know where your database is at. You click apply, you hit submit, and that's it. I am now through creating my data source. So now ColdFusion can talk to my database. That took what, minute and a half? Not too difficult. After it creates the data source itself, you will see it comes over here and it checks it. Can I actually communicate with that data source, yes or no? If the answer is no, you can just come back over here, you can edit that data source, and you can figure out what's wrong. Maybe I forgot to put in my username and password. Okay, now I'll put those in, try it again. If I put something in here, hit submit, chances are it's not going to work. Oops, hang on a sec. Let's try that again without this guy. And it should fail. Access, what do you want? Oh well. Very forgiving, Microsoft Access is. But anyway, that's all you have to do to create a data source. Okay, that's great. Now that I have a data source, what do I do with it? We'll talk about what you do with it in just a second. I have a data source talking to a database. I said we was going to give you the 100,000 foot view of what a database is. Well, this is what a database is. It's a collection of data, hopefully stored into some sort of organized fashion. If it's not stored in an organized fashion, like I said, your application probably is going to have issues. Inside each database, there are bunches of tables. How many tables you have depends on your particular business need. Our application today, we have 3 tables. That's enough for what we need to do. Tables are organized into rows and columns. It looks very much like a spreadsheet, only in appearance. It is nowhere near functionality-wise spreadsheet. It is not functioning like a spreadsheet at all. There's a couple things you need to know when you're creating your column names. In this case, we have things like our last name here. Can you see that, the mouse over there? Kinda in the last name column. We're gonna be able to store up to 30 characters of text in our last name, 20 characters of text in our first name, and our birth date's going to be stored as a date data type. That's important, by the way. Date data type. If you are storing dates, please do not store them in a text field. Getting dates out of a text field is miserable at best. If you're gonna store dates, put them in a date field or a date data type. Oh, try saying that at 8:30 in the morning. Store it in a date data type. Okay, I already mentioned that tables look like a spreadsheet, but they are not a spreadsheet. The one thing about tables that makes a, well, one of the things that makes a table different from a spreadsheet is a table should define one thing and one thing only. A table should not define more than one thing. A table should define people and all information about a person. It should not define people and their pets or people and their kids. If your table is describing more than one thing, you're having a problem with your table. You need to separate those out and to make sure your table describes just one thing and one thing only. The other thing we have about tables is we need this thing called primary keys. Primary keys is a method for you to uniquely identify any given record within your database. If you cannot uniquely identify a row, you are going to have troubles updating that row, selecting data out of your database, deleting a row. The primary key uniquely identifies a record. Very important to uniquely identify anything. Tables do not require primary keys. It's not a requirement. It's a bad idea if you don't use them, however. A very bad idea. I don't think I have ever built a table that did not have a primary key. What did I do? I thought I was just standing here. Man. Another thing I do when I build my tables is I use an auto-incrementing counter for my primary keys. It's just an incrementing integer that starts at one and goes through a couple of billion. The reason I use that is... Are we through? Okay. The reason I do that is because databases work real well with integers. They understand numbers very well. Makes it much faster. And if it's auto-incrementing, then I know I don't have to worry about the value of the primary key. I let the database itself take care of that for you. When you're creating primary keys, you can have more than one column uniquely identify a record. That's called a concatenated key. If you're designing a database, don't use them. You can use them. It's legal to use them. It hurts later on. It is painful, especially when you start building relationships. It is exceedingly painful. So the way I look at a concatenated primary key, it's sort of like dating. You know, if you're going to go on a date, are you going to take somebody else with you? Yeah, that's not really a good idea. So if you're creating a relationship in a database, it's the same thing. Do you really want to take somebody else with you? If you don't have to, don't. Another thing about primary keys, the nice thing is about a primary key is if you have a field specified as such, you cannot duplicate that value. You cannot have two rows that have the exact same primary key value. You also must specify a value or something in that primary key field. You cannot store a record with a null value. You could, I suppose, store a record with a space. Not a real good idea. Is it one space? Is it two spaces? Is it three spaces? And I don't think you can store an empty string as a primary key either. Now, there's a difference, by the way, between a null field and an empty field. A null field is a field that is set to null. An empty field is a field that had a value in it and had it deleted out. They are two separate and distinct things. So if you're working with some of your queries and you think, look, I asked if it is null and I'm looking at the records and there's nothing there, maybe it's not null, maybe it's empty, maybe it's a space. Those are three totally separate things. So if you're doing a is null type of query, make sure that the field is null and not is empty, or make sure your query specifies is null or is empty. Kind of something I've been bit by more than once. Okay, that takes care of all the overview of what a database is, what a data source is, what a database management system is. Well, what does that do for us? overall Cold Fusion programmers are wanting to be or going to be or figuring out if it's good for our company. So let's make a real quick database here. We have a database with three tables in it. We have people, we have pets, and we have pet types. We have a couple of business rules associated with this particular database. In this case, we have one person can own one or more pets. However, only one pet can only belong to one person. We can't have one pet belonging to two people. Business rule decision. Each pet must have a pet type. A pet must be a cat. This is old, isn't it? A pet must be a cat, a dog, or something. It cannot be two things. It can't be cat, dog, and you don't want to listen to this. Even though there's a cartoon that says cat, dog, it can't have it in this particular application. If you'll notice, I have three primary keys in each field. They're kind of highlighted, and they're also the top row of each table. PO count for my people table. I have pet count for my pets table, and pet type count for my pets type table. When you are naming primary keys, please do not use something like ID for all of them. Because when you start building your foreign key relationships, ID doesn't tell you anything about what table that's the primary key of. For instance, I have a foreign key relationship in my pets database, or my pets table. Here I have PO count. I know by looking at PO count that that is probably the primary key of the people table. Because I have the table name in there and I have count. CNT is an auto-incrementing mechanism I use that says this is an auto-incrementing field. So I can just look at this value right here, PO count. Oh, that's the primary key of the pet table or the people table. I can go down one line and look at this pet type count, and I go, oh, that's probably the primary key of the pet type table. If this was ID over here and this was ID over here, I would have to put some sort of string in here like ID of the people table. Or I could put something more cryptic, ID1, and I could put for pet type count ID2 right here. That's difficult to read. I don't like difficult to read. I like easy to read. PO count describes people. Pet type count describes pet types. Any questions yet?
You mentioned that.
I'm not sure what you mean by header detail. Is that a progress specific type of thing? Because header detail.
You know, like you have your order with a customer name.
You know, the nice thing about a relational database, order is not relevant. It does not matter the sequence that I shove data into my database. It doesn't matter. I have queries that order it when I pull it out, and we will get to some order bys. But right here, I could, if I can get my mouse back, I could have used these two fields right here as my primary key if I wanted to. I may have been able to. Not a good idea. It really isn't. Because if I ever build another relationship off of the pets table and I have a concatenated key, then I have to carry two more fields over to create that relationship. Then your queries start getting complicated. At the end of this, if I don't cover what you're thinking about, stop me and we'll talk about it. Because I'm thinking that might be a progress related or a terminology thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a database design thing. We can talk about that. Okay, so now we have our database. There is some data in this database that's in my little application we're going to be talking about. So how do we get data out of our database? Well, there's this thing out there called SQL Structured Query Language is what it stands for. It's very universal. It's fairly simple to write. Not always, most of the time. 9 times out of 10, you're going to be writing things like select queries. Give me data back. Occasionally, we'll be putting data in, modifying existing data, or deleting data. But we'll have to start with the simple things. Let's crawl before we walk here. We're going to select data out. When we select data for one or more tables. Now, it has to be in the same database that your data source is connected to. I cannot, using Microsoft Access, pull data from a pets database and another database called cities. I cannot do that at the same time. The tables have to be in the same database when you're using a data source name. That's, I think, a limitation of SQL, not of Cold Fusion, by the way. At a very minimum, you need two clauses to create a select query. You need a select, in other words, what information do I want, and you need a from clause. Where am I going to get that data from? I want to select something, and what do I want, or where do I find that data at? There's also many things you can specify with it. You can specify where's, for filter criteria, we can order by, we can link tables together, and we're going to go through all of these things here in a few minutes. Okay, let's start with a real simple thing. We're going to select first name, last name, city from our people table. When you're writing your queries, by the way, I've seen many databases where they just go select splat from table. Select splat works, but it makes it more difficult for your database to process, because when you select splat, your database has to go and find out what all fields are in that table. Then it has to run the query with all those fields replacing the splat. It's just overhead that you don't really want to mess with. Just write down the names of the fields. It's real easy in HomeSite or CF Eclipse. You just drag and drop the field names in. It's a whole lot easier, and it speeds things up. And let's take a quick look at this little application. So we're just going to select all records here. This is the exact same query I just showed you a second ago. Select first name, last name, city from people. We have a little more Cold Fusion stuff on there that we'll talk about here in a second. And then you can see in our database that we have Santa Claus, Jack Frost, Jack Skeleton, the Easter Bunny, and of course I am an Aerosmith fan, so we have to have Steven Tyler in there as well. So how does all this work? Oh, by the way, some databases do require that you fully qualify the field name you select, and there are times that you have to qualify the field you're selecting also in your select clause. But how does this work? Well, we have this thing up here called CF Query. Oh, CF Query is a great, great tag. In there, we specify our data source name. You saw me create that data source name just a few minutes ago in CFAdmin. Now that it's created, here is where I use it. So I'm going to use CF Query, data source equals, in this case I'm using pets_db because that is really the data source name that I have set up for this. And if you look at my Cold Fusion administrator, you'll see pets_db down here. This is the data source that we are actually talking to at this point in time. Oops. And I'm giving my query or my record set a name. After I dump the data out, I want to be able to refer to it somehow. So I'm calling my data getPeople. So if I want to output this data, I'm going to use getPeople.fname, and I can output that data. When you're using CF Query, anything in between the two query tags, anything in between here, all this stuff here, is just standard SQL. Just standard SQL. If your database understands it, Cold Fusion understands it. Sometimes some of the SQL is DBMS specific. There are sometimes you have to use quote marks instead of ticks or special characters in your queries. But for the most part, standard SQL will work with almost every single database out there. Notice we don't have to pass a username or password. If we were connecting, say, to a SQL Server database or an Oracle database, there's no username or password up here. Why? Well, it's in our DSN, it's in our data source. It's stored on Cold Fusion Administrator, so I don't have to remember it. As a developer, all I need to know is what is my data source name, username, password's passed on with me, so I don't have to worry about that at all. Let's see, data sources part two. When we pass this, when we pass the data source name into our query, what happens if we have 500 pages in our application and we have, say, 1,500 queries? What happens if we change our data source name? Well, we have to make 1,500 changes. That's more than I want to make. I'm a lazy man. I got to admit, I don't want to change anything 1,500 times. And if I have 500 templates, I sure do not want to use a global search and replace. That's scary to me. That is very scary to me. So what I like to do is, if you're using Cold Fusion 5 or lower, I like to use this command right here, cfset request.dsn equal my data source name in my application.cfm file. If you're using application frameworks, you would set that in application.cfc. You could either set it as application.dsn or a session.dsn. You could still use a request.dsn. The point is, though, you want to set your data source name somewhere in your application.cfm or application.cfc file. That way, if your data source name ever changes, you make one change and everybody knows about that change. It is so much easier, so much easier. So all we have to do to change our query, instead of typing in pets.db, all we do is we put our pound signs around request.dsn or application.dsn, depending on how you scope your variable here. And you just put it in your data source right there. That's the only difference. That way, when it changes, you change it up here in application.cfm, and it's reflected down here in all of your queries. Big time saver. I know somebody at the state of Idaho that didn't do that. He did use a global search and replace to modify all of his data source names. About 2.5 hours later, he got his application back. Not a good thing to do, really isn't. Okay, so when we ran this little output over here, you'll notice that all the stuff over here is outputted with the first name, comma, last name, comma, and then the city name. And you can see that right here also. And then, of course, a break. This is just standard HTML. The actual application has some table tags and TRs and TDs that I didn't want to throw in here just because it just gets in the way. It's just standard HTML wrapped around this output query. If you want to just show one record set or one record out of your record set, all you have to do is use the query name, in this case, get people, what field you want to display, and what record number. In this case, this would just show the first record returned from your query. If I put two, it would just show the second one, yeah? Four, yeah. Well, that's the record number of what was returned. It is not the primary key value. It's just whatever the first record was in your query, returned by your query, that shows up. Because if you're using an order by clause, you don't know what the primary key is. And really, the end user doesn't care. The database and the application cares. Nobody else should care. If you want to show all people, all you do is you put your output in CF output, you put the query name in there, and it will loop through the entire record set. One warning, if you're putting a CF output inside a table, tables are very slow to draw, so if you have about 500 records or so and you're putting each one on its own unique line in a table, boy, your application sure slows down if you have to build 500 rows. Hey, Sarge. Any questions on how to show all records or getting things out? CF output, it's our friend. It does wonderful things for us. If you'll notice in the first one, we don't have our query specified up here because we specify our query name in between the pound signs. In the second one, we put our query name up here so we do not have to specify the query name in the field names. So just a minor difference, but an important one.
Question. Mm-hmm. The table would
filter your record set down. If you want to have nice formatting, filter your record set down. If you don't want nice formatting, then just spit it out without the table tags, or maybe just put it all on one TR. But if each row has its own TD or each row has its own TR, then it really slows down. Yeah?
I'm just trying to end from the CF output.
Yeah. Everything in the record set that was returned by this query right here. Select last name, first name, city from people.
So if you were to do a table, you put the table tags outside of the.
Yeah, you'd put the table tag right here and then the TR. And then the TR and the TD would go between the CF outputs, yeah. If you put the table on the inside, that means it's going to create a whole new table every row. And ooh, that's even worse. That's a whole lot worse. 500 tables, performance hit there. Yeah? I'm sorry, what?
You don't have
No, I could have put comma pound get people dot l name pound if I wanted to. I was just trying to show a concept on that one. Anything else? Because really this is all you really need to know to display data. This is it. That's all. Not too bad. I mean, you got one output tag. Yeah. Just put a zero here, right there. Just put in a zero. That would be it. And then you could specify all the field names you want to show in the exact same notation. If I wanted to show the first name and last name, then I would put a comma, pound, get people dot L name, bracket, 10, bracket. So if I wanted to do that, I certainly can. Now I'm going to show the first name and the last name of record 10, if I have 10 records. If I don't have 10 records, I think I'm going to get an error. So.
You change that to L name, right?
Oh, wow. Okay. If we want it to work and not show the first name twice, yes. Yeah. When you pass, you pass. Okay. But really, this is it. This is all you have to know to output data. This is it. You can just either use CF output and specify what record you want to look at, or you can put your output with a query and loop through that. You can also use CF loop, but we don't want to get too complicated yet. Occasionally, you're going to find some of these lovely databases name things really stupidly. I don't know if stupidly is a word or not, but the way some of these databases designed, some database designs are made are stupid. For instance, I have worked on an application where they had a field called pound sign space of space items, number of items. You think Cold Fusion would really like to see a pound sign in a field name? No. SQL allows you a way to get around bonehead design, and that's about the best way I can describe it, and that is by using the as command. As is great. It gives a temporary name to a field in a database. So I can alias something like pound sign space of space items as num items. So now I'm going to refer to that as num items instead of pound space. So to see what that looks like, I have a real simple query here. Again, where I'm going to select my first name as my name, and then in my output tags, I'm going to loop through the query. Notice get people is my name up here, get people. I'm going to display my name, and my name happens to be Santa, which happens to be first name as my name. Kind of a roundabout way of getting there. Also notice I am now using request.dsn, so I don't have to pass in pets_db anymore. And this is how it is in the code sample too. It's the exact same way. Any questions on as? As comes in real handy, by the way, because we can do math with as. We can concatenate fields. We can concatenate fields using as. Wow, some of these words are hard this morning. Concatenating fields, for instance, last name space first name. You know, this is something I do all the time. Is I will concatenate last name, comma space first name, and I will call it something like my name. By the way, if you're doing database design, never put the full name in one field. Last name goes in its field, first name goes in its field, middle name goes in its field. That way, you can control what's in the first name field, what's in the last name field, and you can sort. If everything is into one field name, how do you know the person didn't go last name, comma, space, first name, comma, space, middle initial, comma, space, suffix, and then mister? Ugh. It's hard to get data out if you put first name, last name, and all that stuff into one field. I've seen it done before, but it's nasty. Another thing you can do is you can do math on your fields. You can do something like select name, comma, and then salary times 1.1 just to see how much a raise would affect a particular employee. And then you can call it as whatever you want. Our example here, we're going to select the first name, last name, and city. But we're going to concatenate the last name with a comma, a space, and display it as my name. Come to example 3. Select last name, comma, first name as my name. On the output, we're just outputting my name, and sure enough, we got outname, comma, space, first name. Of course, over here we have the other comma. For here, we have our space, although you can't really see it right there. There's our space, and then we have our city name right here. Kind of makes sense, Santa Claus lives in the North Pole. Got that one right. Okay, as all right? Anybody got a question on as? Concatenation on that? Sure. Database management software specific. You might have to RTFM, read the flipping manual, to figure out exactly how to concatenate. This particular stuff works with Access, and I know it works with SQL Server, Informix, DB2. You'll have to read the manual. I'm not exactly sure on that. Just not sure. But it should. Most databases do support concatenation. You just have to figure out what's the syntax required for it. Oh yeah, as is a SQL thing. It's universal. Yeah, it's just that's there. One of the two.
Are there any other words besides that?
Yeah, there's all sorts of things we can use in select and in the where clauses, and we're going to get to a few of those here in a few minutes. Yeah.
Can you
Nothing. Nothing. However, concatenation sometimes has issues when you start working with integers and dates. It works real well. Concatenation works real well with text, not so good with numeric data. I'm not sure if there's a way around that. Maybe you could select a field as something and then use that alias in your concatenation string. I'm not sure if that would work or not, but for the most part, it works great with text. The rest of it's sort of hit and miss. Anything else? In my primary keys, yes, yes. This is data output. No difference at all. Makes no difference at all. SQL. The more you can offload to the database server, the more you can have the SQL server do, the better off you are. Because databases are real good at doing what they do and concatenating fields and performing math function on fields. Those are things that they do very fast. So you don't have to perform those calculations once you get the data back to the ColdFusion server. So if you can offload that work to the SQL server, let it do its job, return the data, and all you have to do, hopefully, is just display the data out. Now, selecting data is great, but if we have 1,500 records or so in our table, we might want to search for just one person or maybe two people. We might want to start using some where clause or filter criteria. In this case, we're going to select where PO count, which is, remember, our primary key of the people table, is number one. Notice on the where clause that I do not have tick marks around the number one. I don't have tick marks or quote marks. If you are selecting integer data, you do not need to delineate that data. If you are selecting text data, alphanumeric data, you do need to use delineation. And by delineation, I mean a tick mark or a quote mark. I usually use ticks. I've found ticks work with pretty much everything. There might be a DBMS out there that requires you to use quotes instead of ticks. So to see how this one works, we'll go to example four. And Santa Claus happens to be number one. Yeah. Primary key value one. The primary key for Santa Claus is number one.
Could you do row one?
If I did not use the where clause, but then there's no guarantee that Santa Claus is the first record, because maybe I have an order by clause with last name, and Santa's not the first last name. And we'll get to order by here in a second. So it'll make sense in just a few minutes, I promise. Anything else? I got to check something real quick here. Okay, I'm fine, 63%. Our where clauses, by the way, we will be writing very extensive where clauses as we start developing applications. And pretty soon I'll even show you how to use a form to create your where clause for you. There's lots of ways you can use where clause. Like I said, you can use alphanumeric text. If you use text, you must delineate it with some sort of mark, usually a tick mark. So in this case, we're going to search where last or first name is equal to Jack. Jack's a pretty common name, so we ought to get more than just one thing out here. And even though many people say, I don't know Jack, I know Jack Frost and Jack Skeleton is in my application. All I did here is I put same query where first name equals tick, Jack, tick, and we got the two records there. Pretty simple. Yes, no. More coffee? I wonder if we could get a waitress in here, maybe a waiter reference. Okay, we can use our where clause on dates fields too, and this is why I mentioned earlier, if you're creating a date field, use a date data type. If you do not use a date data type, this call will not work. In this case, I want to find all the old farts in my database, and I want to find everybody that was born before January 1st, 1901, and that would make them 105, 106 years old. That's old, in my opinion. And this will work just by looking at the date field. And here I am showing the people that are older, well, that were born before 1901. Santa Claus was in 1848, and Jack Frost was in 1863. Notice I'm using this create ODBC date field. This is a ColdFusion function, I should say. And I use that and I wrap it around the date that I want to select. I have found this create ODBC field or function works with every database I've ever worked with. Databases have their own little way that they like to talk to date fields. Create ODBC date is a very standardized way of talking to date fields. I think you beat him by about 1 second. I will format date here in a bit.
So you're actually casting.
I think I am, anyway. Right here? I have tick marks around it. Yes, I do. You know, I'm not so sure that's accurate. Let's find out real quick. Let's see, what is that one? That is query 6. Yeah, that's accurate. In this case, yeah, I typed it in. Now, later on, you can pass in values in there too, but if you're going to hard code it, yeah, you're going to have to specify it like that. Lots of things you can do with dates. You can use between dates, you can use greater than or equal to. Dates are very, very handy as long as they are specified as date data types. If they are text data types, all bets are off. It is very difficult to select based on a text date. Trust me, been there, done it, did not like it one bit. Yeah?
What if your table already defines the date format?
It should work. As long as the date data type is set to date, it should work, regardless of the formatting applied by the database. That's why I like that create ODBC function.
So the table itself in your access database can still assert a certain format?
Actually, CF can exert its own properties on whatever is returned by the database.
Okay, so it
formats, because it's the last one with it. Okay. It's like, hey, it's my data, I'm going to do with what I want. This is how you stored it, well, this is how I'm going to present it. It doesn't ask for permission. You can. In this case, I didn't specify it, so it just came out as a date time stamp field. Nice thing about where clauses is you can start using multiple where clauses. You can use an and or a or in your where clause. In the first one here, we will return all people born before January 1st, 1901, and their first name is Jack. In this case, if I ran that query, I should only return Jack Frost. In the second one, which is the example that I have on my application, we're looking for everybody born before January 1st, 1901, or their first name is Jack. And when we run this, we should get one more record because I have a Jack skeleton. Notice Jack Frost meets both criteria, however. Jack Frost was born before January 1st, 1901, and his first name is Jack, but he only shows up one time. That's important to know. If you have an OR clause and a record has to meet any portion of that OR clause, and it gets displayed one time. It does not get displayed every time it matches the criteria. One time and one time only. If you get multiple records, you might need to use the word select distinct. And that will select a distinct instance of whatever record you're searching for. And you know what? I don't think I do use date format anywhere. I think I lied to you. But I could have put something like, let's see, what is this? Query 7. And here's the output. You know, here's my, well, this right here, this is the actual output. This is what does its thing. And just to show I'm not lying to you, I'll put in an XXX there and date format birth date. Rerun this. Did I save the right one? And now I have my XXXs and I do have my dates formatted accordingly. So date format's a very simple thing to use, and because it's the last thing to touch the data, it does what it wants with it. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you're lazy like me, and I do believe in being lazy. It's a programmer's not only prerogative, but I think it's an obligation to be lazy. If you're going to select a bunch of OR clauses, there's no reason why you can't use the IN. Instead of writing where PO count equals 1 or PO count equals 3 or PO count equals 4, I'm just going to use the in. I'm going to put a bracket. I'm going to put my criteria separated by a comma and another bracket. And it's going to do the exact same thing as multiple or clauses. It's just in 1, 3, and 4. This time I am outputting the primary key of the people table to show that I'm not lying. Here's 1, here's 3, and here is 4. And Santa Claus is still number 1. Santa's my buddy. 4 kids later, he has to be my buddy. Not. Oh, not's a good thing, too. Not's a negator. Is that the right word, negator? I think it is. So if I want to select everybody that is not in a field, I can do that. In this case, I want to find everybody whose people count is not 3, 5, or 7. Or I can find where somebody's birth date is not null, which is different than is not empty or does not equal tick space tick or equal tick tick, which is empty. But we use not quite often, so I'm going to go and run that one here. And here, PO count does not equal 3, 5, 7, so I should get 1, 2, 4, 6, and anything above 6. How come I don't have 6, or 8, or 9? Well, I had a record in 6, I deleted it. If you're using an auto-incrementing field, that number does not get reused. 6 is gone, it will never be used again. Just will never be used again. So everybody in my database has these primary keys. If I add another one, it'd be number 11. If I added one after that, it'd be 12. If I deleted a record, number 11, the next record I add would still be 13. It would not go back to 11. Yeah? I think I screwed up my PowerPoint, to be honest with you. People not in. I guess I could.
Does it still work?
No. 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 Great. Let's try that again. Where'd my mouse go? Hello. There we are. Good catch, by the way. Very good catch. Okay. Anything else on that? Much better this way. Like clause allows you to do all sorts of text searching. Text searching is very slow, by the way, so if you are doing text searching, I would suggest that maybe you want to look at a different way to search. If you have to search through 15,000 records where you are searching for a particular thing like AR in a field name, that's a slow, slow way to search. Wildcard matching is very, very slow and tedious. So when we're going to search for a like clause, we use our percent sign. If you're doing this in Microsoft Access, you have to use a splat. Some database management systems may use the percent, some may require a splat. Yeah?
What's a splat?
Asterisk. Splat's easier to say than asterisk. I always butcher that word and end up offending somebody, so I use splat. You know, it kind of looks like a bug you step on. So. In this case, we're going to search for everybody that starts with the letter J in the first name. If I wanted to find people like Arnold, Charles, Barbara, Karen, I can specify, where's my mouse again? I can specify percent AR percent, and it will find anything that either starts with an AR, ends in an AR, or has AR anywhere in between. In this case, I'm just looking for the J percent. So when I come and run my query here, like J, I get Jack and Jack.
Is there a more efficient option that lets you look at the very beginning of a string?
That's what this is doing. It's looking for the first character has to be J. I don't care about anything after the first character. I just want that first character to be J. I could put in JAC here, and it would have returned the same records.
I guess what I was saying is something other than the like.
No. You can use substring functions, but now we're talking a little more advanced SQL, and this is really meant to be basic SQL. But yeah, there are millions of things you can do with SQL statements, and creativity is a good thing.
You put like bases in there.
Yes.
The last character.
Yes. You mean something, so I could go something like, what is this, 10? Like that? I'll save it, come back here, rerun it. And it's returning the exact same thing. The reason this did not change is because I didn't come down here and go, there it is. But if I come down here and look at my query itself, there's my query itself that I actually ran. That's the query. So yeah, I can put in multiple things in my like clause. Okay. Oops, come back here. Now we're getting into the power of a relational database where we start joining tables together. You know, I would really like to know everybody in my database that has a pet, and I would like to know what that pet name is. There are different ways to join tables together. You can use inner joins, you can use outer joins. If I'm using, I just want to join these two tables together, I like the where clause. Some people likes the outer or the join clause in their from statement. To me, that's more complicated than it needs to be. I like the where the primary key of the people table equals the primary key or the foreign key equivalent of the pets table, and the pet type primary key equals the foreign key equivalent in the pets table. If you remember our little schema and you go back to that little diagram of pets and people and pet types, this makes a whole lot more sense. So I'm going to go and run this where I return all of the people that have a pet. In this case, Santa Claus happens to own 3 dogs. Easter Bunny owns an elephant, which I don't quite understand. I got my Calvin and Hobbes going thing. That's always a good thing. If I come down and look at my query, it's exactly what I showed you on the slide. Where clauses and joining tables together, this is where you get the power of relational databases. And I got 5 minutes left, so I have to hurry a little bit because there's a couple more things I want to show you before we leave. So I gotta kind of speed up a bit. If you'll notice on this example, nothing is ordered. I got my clause before bunny. That's not really a good sort order. So I'm gonna use the order by command. I'm gonna sort by last name descending, pet name ascending. Ascending is the default when you sort. If you wanna sort descending, you have to force it. So here I am forcing my descending sort order on last name, ascending on first name. Sure enough, we have S before F before C before B, and within the pet name, I'm sorting by the pet name, I have Hobbs, Maggie Moo, and Slytherin. So you can use order by to specify how to get your record set out. And now if I'm using my just return record 1, I would get Jack Skeleton instead of Santa Claus. That's why using record 1 does not equate to primary key 1. Dynamic queries. Oh, this is where life is good. This is where you use forms to create your where clauses, and this is great. This is the cool part. Notice if I'm passing in PO count, my primary key, it's an integer. I do not have my ticks. If I am searching for names, it's alphanumeric field, so I do use my tick marks. And I'll show you a real quick example of that, and I only got like 3 minutes left. Okay, on example 13 here, who do you want to search for? Anybody? Santa Claus. I can only search for one person. I know Santa Claus has 3 things. Oh, I'm sorry, Easter Bunny? Okay, I can search Easter Bunny. I can do that. Actually, all I'm returning is that person. So I'm just selecting the first name, last name, person. And sure enough, I selected the Easter Bunny. He happens to be number 4. Santa Claus, I think he was number 1. So there you go. You build your queries dynamically. And the nice thing about Cold Fusion is it builds its query at runtime. It's when your user enters the data, it builds the query. So if I have a drop-down list and I can select multiple things on that, my SQL statement, I'm going to loop through the contents of my drop-down list that I pass, and I really wish I had more time to go into this further. But anyway, I'm going to loop through my criteria, and I'm going to create my where clause based on that. So when I come over here to my next example, I'm going to be able to select all the cities where people live. I'm going to select 3 of the 4, hit submit. and I will see that I got Logan Hollywood in Boston. When I come down here and look at my query, it says where city equals Boston, or city equal Hollywood, or city equals Logan. That query was built dynamically based on the contents of the form that was passed into it. It's all in the code. It's really pretty simple and straightforward to get through. If you understand CF loop, this code is really pretty simple. Basically, we loop through the data that was passed to us. If the record is, if it's the first time through the loop, we have city equals city name. If it's not the first time through the loop, we put in the or clause. So city equals a name or city equals another name, because I want to match any of the criteria we passed. That's where or clause comes in pretty handy. Insert into, this is a way you can add data into your database. It's real simple to do. Let's go Perry, Joe, yada yada. He lives in Boston also. A11. So now I just inserted something into my database. I now have Joe Perry in my database, and all I did was ran my get people query just to return everything from the people table. The code to do this is in the online download. You can get it from there. I wish I had more time to go over it a little further, but all you have to do is insert into, this is standard SQL by the way, insert into table name, the field names you want to put data into, and the values that you want to put data into. These things have to line up. Last name here, the first one in your insert into statement, has to be the first one in your values. The address has to be, or the first name has to be number two in both. Sequence is critical on here. The order that you use up here must be the same order that you use down here. Sequence is critical. Tick marks around alphanumeric text, tick marks are not required around integer text. If I'm going to update somebody, in this case I just wrote a query that says update Santa Claus to equal Santa Rocking for his first name, and his last name will equal my clause, where people count equals one. If you are going to run an update query or a delete query, you need to specify a where clause. Always, always. If I just ran a query that says update date of birth to today, everybody in my database now has today's birth date. Painful to recover from. Very painful to recover from. You do it once, you don't do it again. You don't want to do it once. If I'm going to run a delete clause or a delete statement or an update statement, the first thing I always do is write a select statement first. Make sure my where clause selects the records I want to get. Then I can run my delete statement. Otherwise, I'm going to be asking the system administrator, could you restore my database, please? That's always embarrassing. It is always embarrassing. So if I look at this example here, all I did was I ran the update thing. I set Santa's first name to Santa Rock and his last name to my clause. Then I just dumped everything from that table back out, and sure enough, my Santa Rockin' clause lives at the North Pole still. And I think that's about it, except there's a whole lot more to learn. Obviously, I'm running out of time, so I can't go through all these things. There's a couple things you really want to look at for performance sake. Look at block factor and cached within. I'm getting real close. There are things called CF query param, which there are many people here that are big time believers of. The next class at 9:30, Advanced SQL by Nate Nelson. I think he's up in ballroom number 3. He will probably go over some more of those things. And I just stopped. Well, that's it.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.